Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Yo, what's up? Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance and our friends at Straight Talk Wireless, where they don't play any games, man. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data and 2G for $45 a month. Saving you half the cost of big carriers. No contracts, no compromise. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. So we've got a lot of stuff to get into today. Amin is going to stop by in 20 minutes. We'll talk to him about the latest on what's going on in the NBA. We'll talk some Last Dance finale with him as well. Will Perdue, four-time NBA champion, three times with the Bulls, one time with the Spurs, was Michael Jordan's teammate. We'll talk to him about what it's like being Jordan's teammate. He's very outspoken. He is not a guy you don't want to miss. Trust me, he doesn't mince words. He tells great stories. You're going to want to stick around for Will Perdue at 10:55. And then 11:30, same with Andrea Kramer. We had her on last week. She was fantastic. From Real Sports, she covered those Jordan-era teams. She's in the documentary a ton. Will was in it plenty as well. So we'll talk to them about all that stuff. But first, I want to talk about the Last Dance finale first, and then I want to get into what's going on with the NBA, including something that I think could change the NBA even beyond finishing this season. I'm talking about moving forward into the next season. But we'll start with the Last Dance finale. And look, the last four episodes particularly showed how motivated Jordan was, right? How he motivated himself, how tough and even petty that he could be. But most of all, I thought it was about how human he could be. And I don't know about you, but it got me to appreciate him a little more. The line in at the end of episode 7, where he was saying, "I wasn't asking them to do anything I wasn't already doing." And then he told the director to cut and, you know, break or whatever. Like, that was moving. And there was just more of that this week. And it, whether it was humanizing him or humanizing his teammates, man, I just thought it was really great storytelling. And here's the one thing about Jordan, right? Like, when it comes to him specifically, to be great, and this is for any line of work, you can't always be the nice guy. Or nice girl. And it's going to get me into the Kobe aspect of this in a second here. But in today's world of a 24-hour news cycle, it probably would be way harder to be Michael Jordan and punching teammates and all that kind of stuff. Because look at Kobe, as I mentioned a second ago. Jordan was, in essence, I guess, for lack of a better term, a bit of a villain behind the scenes. Maybe villain is strong. Maybe anti-hero, right? Kind of like Batman or the Dark Knight. But Kobe really embraced that, as we all know now. Now, Jordan did most of that, as we talked about, behind the scenes. Whereas Kobe embraced it, particularly Kobe 24, embraced it completely. And there are so many correlations between the two and so many things, so many parallels. And look, we saw, as I mentioned, you know, three weeks ago, whatever it was now, that Kobe said, without him, I don't win five championships. And in Ian Thompson's book, which is a great book, by the way, you should read it, about basketball. Ian Thompson wrote a book a couple years ago about just kind of all the storylines in the league over the last, you know, 20 or 30 years. And in that book, he talks to Kobe, and Kobe literally says to him, 90% of what I learned from that guy. But Kobe embraced it completely. And the Mamba mentality is something that's pervasive here in LA because anyone can apply it to their own lives. And Jordan was the genesis of that. And look, like many of you, I grew up in a tough-ass household, man. My dad played no games. My mom actually didn't play any games. I've told the story here. When I got old enough to mess with my mom, in the sense of, like, she couldn't hit me anymore and it hurt. Like, I remember one time she tried to hit me and I did, like, a high block. I blocked her. Next thing I knew, about an hour later, I'm playing video games and I'm, like, tired of playing video games. I'm walking out my room. Mom was out there waiting for me. Smacked me right in the face with a broom. Knocked me right onto the bed. So I grew up in a tough household. My dad didn't play any games. My dad didn't mess around. He rode me tough. You know, we were joking last week about Fight Island. When I was a kid growing up doing martial arts, my dad would make me fight with men as like a 14-year-old. And he'd tell them, kick his ass. Because he knew that's how I would get tougher. Now, granted, they probably didn't really hit me as hard as they could, but they didn't pull too many punches. So I grew up in a tough household. Like, I get that. And I think at that time, it was more commonplace. You couldn't do that now, nor would I handle it that way now. Like, yes, there were things that made me feel good about that era and tougher about myself from back then. But I also understand time changes, people evolve, generations evolve. It doesn't mean you can't ride people. It just means you have to do it differently, not maybe the way Jordan did it or even Kobe did it, or certainly not the way my dad did it. I don't think I can handle that with my kids. Like, I don't think that's the way I'm going to deal with it. But it worked for me at that particular time, and it worked for Michael, and it worked for Kobe. But it didn't always work, right? Not everyone's cut out for it. You know, we didn't see a lot about a couple of teammates here and there that never made it with Michael. There are some that didn't make it with Kobe. Shaq told me the story once. I've told this story here too, about how he used to handle Nick Van Exel and Eddie Jones differently. He knew he could curse out Nick Van Exel to get the best out of him, and he knew he had to pat Eddie on the back or on the butt to get him to play as well as he could play. So everyone handles things differently. And if you get the results, then it's worth it. And look, Steve Kerr stood up to him. We talked about that last week. So it just, you got to gain people's respect in some way, shape, or form. And I think that Michael's teammates figured that out. And it was usually standing up to him in some way. Speaking of Steve, though, man, you want to talk about great storytelling and just an emotional aspect of it. When Steve was talking about the loss of his father, and look, I knew that story, but I think it hit different when you see Steve and his mom telling you the story about how they lost his father abruptly. And I think now you can kind of understand a little bit as to why Steve Kerr is as motivated talking about the country and politics and social issues the way he is, because now you understand who his father was. And I thought that tying it all together the way they did with him winning the game against Utah and hitting the big shot and Jordan going to, I thought that that was just fantastic storytelling. And the other thing that stood out over the last several weeks was that we saw a couple of times in the last few episodes that Jordan and his teammates were mortal. Right? And that included how Jordan and his teammates overcame adversity and age on the court. And even, obviously, as I mentioned, some of the stuff off the floor with Steve with his father and Jordan with his father and the leaving to play baseball and just all the different dynamics that were there. Scottie's injuries, whatever, you know, the stuff with the timeout, all the different aspects of it. But yet, it's amazing how they were able to overcome all of that and still win. And it's also pretty amazing how many guys' legacies were altered because of Jordan and the Bulls, both within the team and obviously guys that they played against. So I guess the question is, could they have run it back? And that was kind of the end of it, where Jordan was talking about how, hey, man, I was ready to sign on the dotted line. I think Pip was ready to sign on the dotted line. Laura, we have some sound from Ramona that I sent you that was talking about the possibility of bringing that entire team back for one more run. And I thought she had an interesting opinion on that, on some of the reporting that she did about that particular era. She told this to Brian Windhorst on his Hoop Collective podcast.
I think what everybody wants to know from Reinsdorf, like, did this really have to be the last dance? Could you have done anything different to change things? Could you have fired Jerry? Could you have stepped in? Could you have gotten Phil and Krause to back on the same page? Could you have paid Scottie Pippen? And he tried. He actually did. He went to Michael Jordan after the season and said, hey, Michael, you know, we've done this before. This is three in a row. I know what the team wants to defend the title. Everybody's a year older. I know this felt like the last dance and all that, but don't give me your answer right now. We're at the beginning of the lockout. let me work on Phil. I don't know how long this is going to last. It could be months. It ended up being all the way into the next year. And let me just see if I can get Phil. And Michael said, okay, you know what? If you can get Phil, I'm in.
And obviously Phil had had enough and he wanted to take a break and he went to Montana for the year. They were never able to get Phil. And once that happened, that was done. And look, the damage was probably done at the beginning of that season when they said if he goes 82-0, he's not coming back. And, if I'm Phil, I get it. Phil was also flirting with other teams already by that point, too, including the Lakers, amongst a number of teams that he was flirting with. But could they have run it back? Could they have won? I have my doubts. Could Scotty and Michael have made it work with other guys? Because I don't know if Dennis had much left. So, Bergman, what do you think? Because remember, Rodman went to the Lakers, and he didn't play very much after that. He didn't even play a whole season with the Lakers. He wasn't the same player anymore. So I really wonder if they could have put the pieces around those guys to make it work and beat that Spurs team.
I mean, I feel like Jerry Krause could have gotten the players around Michael and Scotty to
make
it work.
They stood Kukoc, right? They stood Kukoc, too.
Right, there was just enough players there. I mean, you wouldn't have had Kerr, you wouldn't have had...
No, you could have. I mean, you would have had to have signed him as a free agent. But you would have had to have... It would have looked a lot different outside of those three, probably.
Right, and something that we've talked about over and over again in this doc is, as crazy as Jerry Krause was, he was an excellent GM and made very, very good moves to keep Jordan, have people, guys around him at all times. So I believe that Krause could have actually done it if they could have all gotten on the same page. Whether they would have all got on the same page, probably not, since obviously, like you were saying, Phil was already trying to go to the Lakers.
Laura, are you going to miss the Last Dance, or are you good? Are you good with the way it ended and you're ready to move on to the next thing, or are you going to miss it a little bit?
No, I'm definitely going to miss it. It gave me something to watch and something to talk about, especially in relation to sports. And touching on what you guys were talking about, I think it would have been amazing if we would have been able to bring all those guys back. I think the Lakers dynasty would have been different, too. A lot of things would have looked so different.
Yeah, it could have. Right. It could have, because if Phil would have come back, who would have been the coach for the Lakers? Do Shaq and Kobe end up having that kind of success? There's a lot of what ifs there, certainly. Speaking of what ifs, I want to get to the current NBA here in a second, and Amin's going to join us at 10:15. Meanwhile, as the NBA turns, right, and we're trying to figure this thing out, they're trying to get their season back. As I mentioned on Friday, Chris Paul was on the jump. He basically said they want to play, and that seems positive, obviously, that they want to get this thing done. They want to figure it out. They just want to do it in the safest way possible, and they're all working to that particular outcome. So that's good news on the NBA front. An interesting thing, though, excuse me, there's no cough button here when I'm doing it from home. An interesting thing that's been thrown out this weekend, not necessarily about finishing this season, but about what could happen once we're done finishing this season and whenever we get to the off season. And that is that there's a real conversation about bringing back the amnesty clause. And the reason they would want to bring it back, why bring it back? You're probably asking yourself, well, simple. With the NBA likely shrinking the salary cap for next season, once they're done finishing whatever they're going to do now or in the next few months, they have to worry about next season. And Adam Silver's already thrown out that 40% of the revenue is probably going to be gone because of the fan-related stuff, whether that's interaction with the fans and just purchases at arenas and things like that, parking, etc., concessions, yada, yada, yada. So that means the salary cap is going to shrink, which means that the owners are going to have to, and the players are going to need to make up for lost revenue. So bringing back the amnesty clause, if you remember what the amnesty clause was, the player gets their full contract, their full money, but you get one mulligan, basically, to wipe out that contract off your salary cap. And the reason that's necessary is because teams are in danger of not having available space for free agency. Because if we have to shrink the salary cap because of revenue, that means there's not going to be money to sign guys to the particular cap, because you're already going to have guys on the cap for the following season. So I think it's actually a brilliant move for the NBA to do this, because it will really get free agency going. And Brian Windhorst, we have some sound there, Laura, of him talking about some of the reporting and some of the stuff he's hearing about a potential amnesty clause for the NBA.
With the possibility that the salary cap and luxury tax line may fall because of the reduced revenues, they would allow a one-time thing where you could waive a player and he comes off of your books. You still actually got to pay the salary. In a lot of cases, the players' contracts are set up that if that happens, the salary gets paid over a number of years. But that you could basically waive a player and basically get a get-out-of-jail-free card. We don't know for sure if it's going to happen. We just know that it's something the teams are talking about as a possibility. And oh my gosh, if that happens, this was going to be a pretty lame free agency. If that happens, guys, we could see some big time action.
Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, future Lakers? Maybe. We'll discuss on the other side with Amin El-Hassan. You've been listening to the Sedano Show. We'll open it up to Amin. We'll get your thoughts, too, at 877-710-ESPN. What do you think of the amnesty clause? What are the guys you'd be targeting if you were the Lakers or even the Clippers? Who would you be targeting? There'd be a lot of battles between the Lakers and Clippers for a bunch of guys. So we'll talk to Amin about that. We'll open it up to you at 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. That's 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. Who would you be targeting with this amnesty clause? We'll talk to Amin. We'll open up the phones. Sedano, 710-ESPN, back in 3.5 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710-ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Amin El-Hassan will be joining us here, friend of the program, ESPN NBA front office insider. Giving us a straight talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. I think the funniest thing I saw on social media yesterday was DiGiorno, DiGiorno's home pizza, you know, the pizzas that you make at home, tweeting out after the Jordan flu game where we found out there was some bad pizza involved. And their tweet was simply, delivery pizza. Go figure. I thought that was great. Well-timed and well, good placement by DiGiorno's Twitter account. Amin El-Hassan joins us now here. Now, Amin, I want to talk to you about a number of things, including this potential amnesty clause for the NBA. But let's start with The Last Dance. Could you have come? You were skeptical as to it just being pizza, I saw on social media yesterday when it came to the flu pizza game.
Yeah, the pizza story has been out for about like 6 or 7 years now. Like, we've known that's their story, and clearly Jim Grover and the gang are sticking to it. All I say to you is this, George Sedano, knowing now what we know about Michael Jordan after watching these 10 episodes, a man who was upset that George Karl didn't say hello, a man who was upset that B.J. Armstrong celebrated hitting a game-winning shot in a playoff game on the road, a man who was upset that LeBradford Smith just had a good game. You're telling me there's a pizza place in Utah that got him food poisoning, and Jordan's like, let bygones be bygones. It could have happened to anybody. Like, that just does not sound like the Michael Jordan that's been depicted through these 10 episodes. It's certainly not the Michael Jordan that we've known all these years, a guy who creates, like, slights wherever he can to motivate him and to destroy his opponent in every way. And so, yeah, I'm not buying the pizza story. Let me just put it like that.
So what do you think? You think it was just a night out in Utah? Look, I've been to Salt Lake, and I will say this. PJ Carlissimo, I did a game with him once, and he got the hotel to on Christmas night to stay open and serve us some adult beverages till almost 2 a.m. So you're saying there was more to the story. There was probably an adult night out is what you're saying.
All I'm saying is that someone on Twitter said to me, oh, you can't find Hennessy in Utah. And I said, hey, if I found Hennessy in Utah, I know for damn sure Michael Jordan found Hennessy in Utah.
Okay, fair enough. Speaking of stories on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, the Steve Kerr stuff, man, like much like you, right? Like we knew the story. I mean, you worked with Steve, so like you know that story. I don't know Steve like that, but I know the story. But it just really hit differently when you're watching him and his mom, right? Tell that story. It was just great storytelling by the director and the way they kind of created that arc about Steve, starting with the youth. The middle, being with what happened to his dad, and then just kind of finishing it off with him winning that hitting that shot to win the game.
Yeah, obviously, I think I met his mom one time, and obviously that topic didn't come up. So hearing her speak about it and be so composed and strong while speaking about something, I mean, again, we kind of went up through this with Jordan's dad passing in an earlier episode. It's like, I don't think you can ever, I mean, it's hard enough to get over the death of a parent. It's like, to have a parent be murdered, in the case of Dr. Kerr assassinated, that's next level, man. And, you know, it's one of the things to me that is the defining characteristic of who Steve is as a person. Because it would be very easy for someone in those circumstances, and understandable, to breed a hatred and a darkness inside them. And instead, you know, Steve goes the opposite way. He's incredibly understanding, and it never tainted who he was. It's the same way, albeit on a much lower scale. I was talking about Grant Hill might be one of the best people, human beings I know, because if I were Grant Hill and I had all the talent and the promise and the world was supposed to be mine, and then a bunch of ankle injuries because team doctors screwed up and I almost die for MRSA happened to me, I'd be the biggest jerk in the world. I would be so upset at the world for robbing me of what was rightfully mine, not due to any mistake of my own, other than just being a good guy. It would make me so dark and angry. And instead, Grant is just kind of like this really happy-go-lucky guy who's just thankful and gracious and all that. And him and Steve Kerr, they both have that about them. When something truly dark and ugly has happened to them in their lives, they walked away better human beings for it, not worse.
Amino Hassan hanging out with us here. Let's switch gears. So obviously Chris Paul goes on the jump on Friday with Rachel and talks about how the players really want to get back, right? Like they're trying to figure it out. So look, all those things are positive. The one interesting nugget that I thought came out from this weekend wasn't about the potential of fixing and getting back to playing this season. It's about what could happen the following season. And it was about, like, as we know, the revenue is going to be down next year, so the cap is going to be down, the luxury tax threshold is going to be down, and it's the topic of bringing back the amnesty clause, which I think is fantastic for a number of reasons. A, it gives teams a mulligan. B, free agency was going to stink because there wasn't that many guys. And C, the reality is there wasn't going to be a lot of player movement, or the players were going to be put in a compromising position because of the aforementioned salary cap and luxury tax going down. So I do think it's actually a good remedy moving forward, at least one step in trying to remedy the cap situation moving forward. And I think it's great for the fans because there could be a lot more player mobility. We all know fans love player mobility.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not so sure it's a solution that we need, to be honest with you, George. The big issue is not the cap. I mean, if you amnesty, there's still going to be a bunch of teams that are over the cap. You're talking about maybe a $30 million drop in a $30 to $34 million drop in the cap. Like, there's not too many guys in the league who are making $30 to $34 million that you can say, oh, now we're under the cap because of it, and good riddance to that guy. Like, the number of bad deals in the league of that magnitude have dropped dramatically over the years, mostly because a lot of these deals are just shorter nowadays. You don't see too many long-term deals anymore unless you're a fairly young player coming off your rookie scale. And so, I don't know who that helps. It helps in terms of a luxury tax, maybe. But my question then would be, why does the NBA feel beholden to keep the luxury tax where it is? Maybe that's a place where, okay, the cap is going to drop to where it dropped, but maybe we still keep the luxury tax high because, you know, there are a bunch of teams. You know, luxury tax is made to curtail and discourage crazy spending. There, right now, as it is, if the cap drops the way we think it is and we just pretend the luxury tax will drop the same amount, you're talking about 27 teams in the tax. The tax is not designed to, like, be punitive for the entire league. It was designed to stop the few big spenders. And so, to me, you know, instead of talking about amnesty and contracts, I think we need to talk about how we can smooth this out, pretty much. Like, it's the opposite of what happened in 2016 when we had a huge spike. Is there any way we can smooth this out so that we don't have as big a dip, even though we know the revenues have gone down.
See, I mean, this is where being a talk show host is where my this is where my mind goes. But could you imagine the Lakers and Clippers fighting over a minimum contract for Chris Paul and Blake Griffin? Come on, Amin.
I mean, yeah, sure. Yeah, whatever. Like, that's nice. Blake Griffin,
I mean, listen, forget about just this show. Hold on. Forget about just this show. Could you imagine Stephen A. and Max talking about this? Like, let's be real. This is the content we're here for.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess, but it just, I don't know. I don't see, I think when you propose a solution, it should actually address the problem, right? And so, you know, if you have like a huge leak where water is just gushing out of a dam, like putting a little bit of like, what do they call it, like plaster or whatever, you know, or a Band-Aid on it, that's not going to help. And that's what I think an amnesty provision would do in this case.
But think about it this way. Chris Paul could go to the Lakers and finally get back. The Lakers fans could finally get back at David Stern. May he rest in peace. And then Blake Griffin can be a Clipper lifer like he was supposed to be. They can have that little ceremony they wanted to have for him.
They can bring back those T-shirts with Martin Luther King and Gandhi and Nelson Mandela and Michael Jackson somehow also on that T-shirt.
Right.
I mean, I guess. By the way, again, this is my favorite thing. Every time we talk about a ball-dominant player, oh, he should go play with LeBron. Like, we haven't seen this not work before. Okay. Sure. Yeah. Go send Chris Paul with LeBron, because also Chris Paul's got great bedside manner, right? Oh, he's going to be so just, hey, LeBron, whatever you want. You know best. That sounds like Chris Paul, right?
Oh, it would be fun, though. Let's be real. Hey, real quick, this is a funny tweet that I saw from Sirat Sohi, who works for Yahoo. When they were talking about the flu game yesterday, she tweeted out, if LeBron had anything approximating the flu game, we'd be mad at him for letting the media find out he was sick. Fair or unfair tweet?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, but also, again, see, it's hard now because everyone's got their pom-poms out. But back then, during that game, I remember sitting around with my buddy by that game and was like, oh, my God, this dude, like, stop hamming it up. Just go out there and play. Like, we were totally ripping Jordan for, like, oh, I'm so sick. Oh, you know, oh, hold me up. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, I guess it is true. And that was the Knicks fan coming out of you, though. Let's be real.
Oh, of course. Yeah, just like I was like, hey, are we going to talk about Michael Jordan missing a zillion shots in the fourth quarter? Like, those last two shots, the layup and then the shot, that made it into a decent fourth quarter for him. He was struggling out there, man. They did mention it, though.
They did. I saw that. You had tweeted that, and they did. They did show a lot of missed shots. But, of course, did he push off or did he not? Where are you on that?
Oh, yeah, he pushed off, man. Come on. Like just because the dude had no chance of recovering doesn't not make it a foul. Like, that's what I don't get when people are like, oh, he was already going in that direction. Okay, then you ain't got to touch him. how does that make sense? It's like if somebody fell on the floor and you stepped on them as you went up for a layup. Like, yeah, he was already down. He couldn't contest, but you stepped on the guy. Like, that's a foul. Why are we doing this? Why are we, I get it. And that's the funny thing, man. As I look around, and many of our colleagues either grew up in Chicago or grew up Bulls fans, you know, people like Sarah Spain, and I'm like, I get it. He's the best player ever. And you, as a child or as an adolescent, you idolize him. But, like, we can sit back now and say, oh, yeah, that was a foul. Like, without betraying your allegiances to your city or your favorite team or your favorite player, you can also sit back and say, yeah, man, that was pretty much a foul.
I thought it was also funny. I had forgotten Isaiah was doing those finals with Bob Costas, and he clearly was saying that it was a push-off.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, Isaiah did all those games, and what Costa said is absolutely true. Because, again, I remember watching that and always thinking, much in the same way that when I watched Mark Jackson call Warriors games, like, how hard would it be for me to be fair and impartial calling the game of someone who I felt wronged me in one way or another? And obviously, in the case of Isaiah Thomas, like, it's, you know, Mark Jackson got fired from a job. That stinks. Isaiah Thomas got left off the greatest team of all time because people didn't like him, or certain individuals didn't like him. And for him to be able to call those games of those certain individuals and never have a hint of bias or kind of snark or anything like that. I always admire that of him.
Amino Hassan, ESPN NBA front office insider, friend of the program, hanging out with us here. Thanks, man. Appreciate it as always. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, George.
There he is. There he went. Amin. All right. Don't forget, 10:55, Will Perdue. I mean, this dude, I don't know if you've seen him do interviews on TV over the last couple weeks on Get Up or First Take or whatever. He was on Get Up this morning, I want to say. And he is as candid comes about how it was to play with Michael Jordan. You're going to want to hear that at 10:55. Andrea Kramer was also featured heavily in The Last Dance, and she's going to join us at 11:30, worked for ESPN, NBC Sports, and covered the Jordan era. So we'll talk to her about that. We've got some breaking NBA news that we'll have here in just a moment, so make sure you stick around for that. Plus, Anthony Lynn addresses the Cam Newton rumors with the Chargers. And, of course, the NFL just doesn't get it. We'll tell you what that's all about. Stick around. Sedano, back in 2.5 minutes here on ESPN LA. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Presented by Progressive Insurance. If you miss any one of our interviews, like Amin, or any of the interviews we're going to have coming up, like Will Perdue, who I'm telling you, you're going to want to listen to this dude. He is really candid and really good. He works in the media still in Chicago for a reason. So if you miss any one of our interviews, check out our interview on demand section for the Sedano Show podcast on Apple Podcasts, the ESPN app, Spotify, Google, wherever you find your podcast, brought to you by Capital One. Why settle for average? With Capital One, you can open a savings account with a rate 5 times the national average. Welcome to Banking Reimagine. What's in your wallet? Capital One NA, member FDIC. So real quick, before I get to the breaking news in the NBA, and we do have some breaking news in the NBA that Woj is just reporting. Did you see this story in the LA Times about a guy who drove 600 miles, okay? 600 miles to get a haircut. Like, get the bleep out of here. There is no way. I will let my hair grow out. I don't care. I actually think it's going to be interesting to see what my hair looks like as it continues to grow out. But I drive 600 miles to go nowhere, okay? You know what I'm saying? Like there's got to be a real reason. There's got to be an actual damn emergency for me to drive 600 miles somewhere. Greg Bergman, are you driving 600 miles to get a haircut?
It needs to be something important for me to drive 100 miles. So you want me to drive 600 miles? Now, I got a lot of questions here. Is this 600 miles, does it say in the story, you know, 300 there, 300 back? Or was it 600 there, 600 back?
He drove from Washington to northern, like the northern tip of California.
What is wrong with this man? Look,
so it's 600 each way.
Yeah. This has been the best barber that he has ever been to in his life. And also, just shave your head, man.
So here's the deal. He drove from Olympia, Washington, and his old friend from his hometown of Yuba City, north of Sacramento, had announced he had gotten a haircut. So he immediately started making preparations, and then he drove down there. So he left a sporting fade haircut with a quarter inch taken off the top. It cost him $20 plus the tip. Yeah, but it cost you like $150 in gas.
Right. And a quarter, you got a quarter inch taken off the top? That means your hair isn't even that long.
You're a dope. Yeah, you're a freaking dope. That guy's an idiot. Like, you're a moron. Like, I'm sorry. I am not the name-calling guy. Like, you know me, Greg. I am not. I will be critical, but I am not let's get personal and call someone names. That's like 12-year-old stuff. That guy's a dope, okay? Like, no way. Laura, you were just talking to us a week or two ago about your hair situation and all that. And with ladies, it's obviously a little different. Right. But 600 miles seems excessive.
No, I wouldn't do it. I actually dyed my hair and damaged my hair because I tried doing it on my own. I would rather do that and have no one see. I mean, you're not going out. Why do you need to have your hair cut? No one's seeing you.
Yeah.
Besides
super
your selfies.
Stupid. Yeah. Super dumb. Super duper dumb. 877-710-ESPN. 877-710-3776. What would you drive 600 miles for right now? What would you drive 600 miles for? Because my guess is sure as hell wouldn't be a haircut. That's just me. So anyway, Anthony Lynn, head coach of the Chargers, addresses the Cam Newton rumors. And basically, here's what he said. He said on CBS Sports that they clearly were interested in Cam Newton. However, they felt that they have a good quarterback room with Tyrod Taylor, who he has a relationship with. Let's not forget, He coached him in Buffalo, created an offense for him in Buffalo, and they just drafted Justin Herbert. So as much as they kicked the tires on Cam Newton, and I know we were all critical of them, is how can you not kick the tires on Cam Newton? Well, apparently the Chargers did kick the tires on Cam Newton, and they felt it wasn't worth it. As much as they think Cam is a great player, they didn't feel like it was they felt like it could mess their quarterback room up at this point. And by the way, I've heard in hushed tones and whispers that maybe the veteran Tyrod Taylor wasn't so thrilled that they drafted a quarterback so high, right? Because he probably thought, I'm going to go play for a coach who helped start, basically get my career going, built an offense for me. He's bringing me in. I'm going to come in and they trust me. They know what I can do within the constructs of that particular offense, and we're going to see where this goes. And this is going to be my real shot. I'm getting another legit shot at this with someone that I can trust. And then they draft a quarterback that high. I can see where the guy would be like not happy about it, or at least not thrilled about it. And then you bring in Cam. Like, forget it. If you're bringing Cam into that mix, I mean, that would be even more of a ruckus, you know, and a potential for even more discomfort and even more sour feelings about the way the quarterback room looks. So I can understand why they wouldn't bring in Cam at this point, because they are going to need Tyrod Taylor. And I bet he's not that thrilled that they drafted a quarterback at six, because he thought this was his opportunity. So I can understand that. So that's the deal with the Cam Newton stuff. The other thing I wanted to get to was something that happened on Friday, and it happened right before my appearance on Mason in Ireland, which was the NFL and their whole minority hiring thing. Like, did you guys see this thing where the NFL, according to Jim Trotter of the NFL Network, who is African-American, and the reason I mentioned that is because this story matters, because it's about minorities. And Jim Trotter did some good reporting as the NFL was talking about, this is just insane, was talking about finding a way to resolve the issues that they've had with minority hiring, right? Clearly, the NFL has a big problem when it comes to hiring minorities, particularly in the coaching ranks and in the front offices. So their solution to this, somebody at the NFL office thought this was a great idea, was that their resolution would be to improve a team's draft position if it hires a person of color as a head coach or a general manager. Because there's only two black GMs and four head coaches of color, which includes Washington's head coach, Ron Rivera, who is Latino. Matching a 17-year low. Now, here's what I would have to say about that. If the intent from the NFL was to correct the huge minority hiring problem that they have in the National Football League, they probably should have consulted the few minorities associated with the NFL currently. Because incentivizing teams is probably not the answer they would have received from the two black GMs and the four head coaches of color that are in currently in the NFL. You know how you do this? It's very simple. You create real paths of opportunity. And we have a Rooney Rule, right, for head coaches, and I believe for general managers, but definitely for head coaches. You need a Rooney Rule for position coaches, because you know what are the position coaches that generally have the quickest pipeline to being a head coach? Quarterbacks coach, offensive line coach. Very few of those are minorities. So I think that that's the way you should do it. You can't sit here and tell me there's not qualified African-American coaches or Hispanic coaches or minority coaches in general that don't know how to coach offensive line, okay? Anthony Munoz is one of the greatest offensive linemen in the history of the sport. Not that he's going into coaching, but you're going to tell me he can't go into coaching? Like, get out of here. Same thing with quarterbacks. You know, like, at this stage, the day and age of the minority quarterback, like, that's over and done with. Just look at the rosters on the NFL, rosters at the moment, and over the last several years. You can't tell me that's not the case. So that's what you need. You need to create a real path and real opportunity. It's not that hard. So it's just one of those moments where the NFL just doesn't get it. Like, it clearly doesn't get it. And by the way, shout out to UCLA. Different, but they hired their first black athletic director, Martin German, who worked at Ohio State as the assistant AD, became the AD at Boston College, and now here at UCLA. Greg, can we get him on at some point?
I've reached out to them. They have not responded just yet, but I will try again.
Okay, cool.
Hope so.
Yeah, I know we're having Mike Bone on tomorrow, right, at 11 o'clock?
Yep, tomorrow at 11 o'clock.
Mike Bone, the athletic director of USC, will join us tomorrow at 11 o'clock. So we'll talk to him about a number of different things, including what the hell's going on with the Pac-12, what's going on with USC, what their schedule is going to look like, all that stuff. So tune in tomorrow at 11 o'clock. But yeah, shout out to UCLA, man. Like, I just think the NFL, like, what are you doing? Like how in God's green earth did you think that was a good idea? All right. Coming up next, LeBron versus Jordan. ESPN polled fans in the LeBron versus Jordan debate. And I'll tell you this, the results, they're going to surprise you. We'll tell you what those are literally in 1 minute. We're back in 60 seconds. I know whether you're on 710 ESPN, tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast with our friend Mina Kimes, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review the ESPN Daily with our friend Mina Kimes, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. So you heard Chris there say that Will Perdue's going to join us. He's going to join us in about 10 minutes or so. So make sure you stick around for that. We will talk to him. He's candid, man. I don't know if you saw him on any of the TV shows. He was clear in the documentary, too. He minces no words when talking about his time playing with Michael Jordan. It's going to be some fun stuff to talk to him. So stick around for that. Andrea Kramer at 11:30 as well. But a couple things. So did you guys see, Bergman, did you see this ESPN poll with LeBron and Jordan?
Yeah, I saw it.
Why were you so like, what's with the tone of voice there?
No, it's just because it was silly. Like, it was just silly.
What was silly about it?
Well, it's silly because it's like, you just can't tell me that that LeBron is not better than Jordan at anything.
Well, this is what people voted for. So here's what I would say. Now, I would agree with you to some extent, for sure. So for those that didn't know, there was ESPN conducted a poll of fans, basically over the age of 18, which maybe skews some of this, right? Because I think that younger kids, much like when I was a kid growing up and I saw Jordan first play, you know, when I first saw Jordan, that I can remember going like, holy crap, who's that guy? I was like 7 or 8 years old, you know what I'm saying? So I think that you become impressionable at that particular age. But in the poll, they asked a number of different questions. Who was the better offensive player? Who was the better defensive player? Who was the better passer? Preferred teammate? Better clutch performer? Choice to take the last shot? More amazing? More likely to win one-on-one? So Jordan won them all, right? By mostly an overwhelming margin. Now, here are a couple of ones that I would look at and say, I don't know about that. LeBron is the better passer. I'm sorry. I don't care what anybody says. I think Jordan is the greatest player I've ever seen, okay? LeBron is a better passer. LeBron is arguably the greatest passer we've ever seen, him and Magic Johnson, okay? So, like, it's, like, forget about that stuff. Like, the passing, I don't even know why Jordan got 59% of the vote. By the way, it was one of the lower ones on the Jordan end. It was one of the lower tallies, okay? Which also included better defensive player. Jordan won there, but also by only 59% of the vote. Preferred teammate, I was kind of surprised. But now, clearly you'd have guys on both sides who would say, yeah, LeBron isn't always the easiest guy to play with. We've talked about that plenty here, right? Ask Kevin Love, who loves him now, but there was the whole fit in, fit out, Instagram stuff, remember all that. So 63% said Jordan would be their preferred teammate. I think it would be a lot closer, personally, when it comes to that. The other stuff, fine. Like, I'm willing to give you all of that. Then there was questions about positive impact off the court. This one kind of surprised me too, okay? Because look at what LeBron has accomplished off the court, right? The I Promise School, right? Look at the graduation thing he just did with President Obama on television this past weekend that ran on a bunch of networks for the graduating class of 2020. you know, LeBron and his position on Trayvon Martin, which is really kind of the impetus for all of this stuff. That's where he really kind of found his voice. I feel like off the court, LeBron's impact is greater than Jordan's, unless we're just strictly talking sneakers. You know what I mean? and finances and things of that nature. Because there, I guess you give Jordan the edge. But as far as like positive impact, like on society, like I don't even think it's close. Like I think it's LeBron. And then it's better look, better signature sneaker, for performance, whatever, yada, yada. All those went to Jordan. But the impact off the court, I'm not buying that. And then lastly, they did kind of the overall categories. And 35 and older, 79% voted for Jordan. Less than 35 years old, so between 18 and 34, 66% voted for Jordan, which meant 73% overall voted for Jordan. But I do think that the fact that, and I get why you wouldn't poll kids under 18 if you're ESPN, but I do think that skews it a little bit. Laura, I know that you think that the generational stuff matters some.
Sorry.
You think the generational stuff matters?
Yes, I do. I apologize. I was editing something. For me, I think talking to my friends that are a little older that grew up physically watching MJ, it's like that was their idol. And for me, it was Kobe. And for my nephew, who is 19, it's LeBron. I can't get into an argument with him because he is so fixated on LeBron. So I think it definitely has to deal with that. It's a generational thing.
Yeah, I do think that. And I think that if we polled Bergman kids under 18 years old, you'd probably have a lot. It would be a lot closer, is my guess, with LeBron.
Yeah, and I don't think that a lot of kids under 18, I'm sure there are some, but I'm sure a lot of kids under 18 weren't watching the Jordan doc and just came off of watching that. They're just more focused on LeBron.
Yeah, of course, because LeBron is the now, right? This is LeBron's time. It's what Frank Vogel told us, right? Jordan had his time. You know, he's one of the greatest of all time, but this is LeBron's time. And he's right. It is LeBron's time. But these polls also, again, the sampling does matter, but I just think it's hilarious that we're doing this thing because, you know what? Why not? Right?
Right. I mean, just some of these trust to pass you the ball. Look, if you're playing with Jordan, yes, you're going to get the ball, but it's just, a lot of times it's because you're not ready for it. John Paxson said, I was not expecting that ball. Steve Kerr, when he got the game-winning shot, he was told. But for the most part, you're not expecting to get to pass the ball. With LeBron, you should be expecting the ball at any second.
Oh, absolutely. All day, every day. There's no way you can argue with me, and I'd love to hear people try to argue against this. 877-7-TEDDY-ESPN. Like, you're not telling me that Jordan is a better passer than LeBron. Like, there's no way on God's green earth, and I am a guy who believes Michael Jordan is the greatest player of all time, right? Him, Kareem, LeBron, you're splitting hairs, but I would put Michael there. You're not telling me that he's a better passer than LeBron. The only rival when it comes to passing that LeBron has is Magic. That's it. End of story. To me, there's no convincing otherwise. So there's that. The impact off the floor, too, right? Like, I also feel like people are. My guess is the factor there has to be the economic factor, like the shoes and what he did from a branding perspective. Because I don't even think it's close. Like, Jordan, we were just talking about, and by the way, he didn't shy away from it, nor did he change his position very much about his political stances or lack thereof, whereas LeBron has taken a completely different tact.
Right. I think it just depends on what part of the off the court you're paying attention to, because David Stern in the doc just yesterday was saying, you know, because of Michael Jordan, we went from, I think it was something like 82 countries to 215 countries.
No, right. Yeah. And that, sure, that changes stuff. There's no doubt. I'm with you. But I don't think it's as big a disparity as it was in that poll. Charlie in the LBC. Charlie, what do you got?
You know, what you're talking about when you're talking about LeBron versus Jordan, I think there's a difference between both of them as human beings off the court, where one is a little bit more liberal, one's a little bit more conservative. So there is a generational gap there. But, you know, it sounds like to me like you're really like leaning towards LeBron and explaining a lot about LeBron, when at the very end, there's no comparison with LeBron and Jordan because of the championships.
No. That's not, Charlie, that's not what I'm doing at all. I literally said it four times that I think Jordan is the greatest player I've ever seen. It's either really him or Kareem. And I guess maybe you can make the case for LeBron. And thank you for the call. But He's not a better passer. Like, there's a million, there's 10 of these different categories. He's not a better passer. I don't think he had a bigger impact off the floor. And I think there was one other one, whatever it was. But that's it. Like, the other stuff, I understand why people would vote Jordan. All right, we'll take more of your calls at 877-710-ESPN. I do have to break real quick. Will Perdue's going to join us, one of the Jordan teammates, as outspoken as anyone about what it's like to play with Jordan. He joins us in 2 minutes.